because we got station image. That's going to be the background that Kent's going to use now. But 1978. He wants me to tell you these credits. But look at how we are ambiguous. We can claim anything. We can be the most evil, and we fail at that. We can be the most loving, and we fail at that. Right? We can be the most interval, the most in the middle. We fail at that because none of it is there. So I'm trying to make you see what I'm saying, or hear what I'm looking at.
I can understand.
The word is in.
Yeah, you couldn't understand. This is what
my point of my call was.
No, wait, don't stick with that. No, I'm digging your point. No, this thing is that you can't understand what I'm saying, but we humans walk around with a lot of consensus, right? We're in the interval.
I'd say we walk around with a heck of a lot of consensus.
And we know it's not true.
I am consenting to the very idea that I mustn't swear.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you.
Because you guys, you know, what the hey.
Yeah, we'll get in trouble, right? We do not run that level of reality. They can stop us in.
No,
do you want to know something about the true subgenius? That Reverend Stang, he has a show in Dallas every Sunday night for an hour. It's called The Hour of Slack or something like that. He regrets that he cannot have a talk show. Now, he is supposedly the chief epopt of the Church of Subgenius, and he can't have a talk show because they got nailed by whatever regulatory body is there in Texas, the FCC or something, and therefore he envies my situation and concedes that I got more slack than him in operating this show because our members don't, you know, get in trouble verbally, which would cause a problem, and he cannot do, which is what he wants to do, what we're doing. He cannot do it because of the ridiculous language that his members used in Dallas years ago. So we're in a very valuable situation here.
It just seems so contradictory that this organization that embodies, like, complete total disregard for society and calling other people pinks and et cetera, you know,
since the company
to fall into the trap of not being able to swear on the radio. You know, it seems kind of like, well, you're...
Well, we're acknowledging the conspiracy.
What? You're acknowledging it.
We believe there's a conspiracy on that level. And look, the thing is that... Well, but see, that would become monotonous if we kept using that point of view. We actually believe life is serious. That if you read the book of the subgenius, and most of it comes in my files, and Stang ripped it off and put it together after I left Dallas in 82, you notice it advocates. I have no idea why you think that's funny, but that's the interval we live in. You're laughing away, hallucinating in your own dimension, your own vibe. And yeah, the book is or this? Life? The book is confusing because, remember, it says in the book to many subgenies are normal. They look normal. They act normal. You got to remember that. There's nothing to go by. We don't know who subgeniuses are. Therefore, any set pattern or way to be a subgenius is not subgeniushood. So this is a basic, you're not going to... You can get craziness on the rest of CKLN's programming. There's lots of it. I mean, they put on I never can remember her name, Sandra Bernard or something. What's her name? You know, or Tom Waits. Crazy people, right? So you can hear that any time. But we're trying to talk... We're actually trying to run a revolution here. We're actually trying to take over. And aware of all the complications that implies. Can you believe how difficult this is? And at the same time, we don't even pay attention to our agenda.
Well, let me tell you, I don't want to take up too much of your time here.
Well, I think you've been a good caller. You've got some good dialogue going.
I don't know. I got my ideas.
And we're in the interval.
Okay, we're in that interval.
That's right. And don't get stuck with the concept of the interval. But every now and then we got to say it. You know, go extreme. If you want to try another approach on me, call back in a little while and take another tack with me and see what kind of bob you evoke, all right? Okay?
Okay.
Thanks a lot, caller.
Let us go back. The name is
Blatex. Thank you.
Okay, then.
Good night. Bye.
Hello,
caller.
Hello, Bob.
Oh, Scott. Yeah, Scott. What's happened?
Not much. I'm just sitting in listening. But I thought I would contribute. I wanted to put the fear of Bob in people.
Oh, one thing, Scott. I don't know if that's going over. Is that going over? Is the music going over, Scott?
I don't hear it.
It's not really going over, Kent. I don't know. Way of life. Can you hear me if I go into the other room? Let's just check that, Scott.
I think so.
Okay, just a second.
The evolution of rock. The music that made the world turn.
Can you hear me, Scott?
I can hear you over the radio, but not on the phone. And
rare original. Yeah, it's, you're supposed to hear me over the radio. Kent, can you just turn it down just a bit? Because it's hard to keep
I can hear you over the radio, not over the phone.
It's just so noisy with Kent. You know, Mike's not here, so Kent, he likes to offer a lot of undertow. I call it undertow, and he's going to take advantage of it, so let's try to put up with it.
Wow, with all this media bouncing, I'm so glad to have you back on the air, Bob.
What media's bouncing?
With all the media fasting that I've been doing.
Oh, what happened?
I don't know. All sorts of strange things happen. First of all, I find that it's really hard, but all sorts of strange things happen. Anyway, let me praise Bob for a minute. I just think it's great that with your mission,
yeah,
you still have time to free your flock.
To what?
Free your flock.
See, I got to get Kent to turn it off. I can't. We're trying to have a serious show. We did a lot of collage on August 22nd, right?
Yeah.
The show. I don't think we need this collage. I mean, that previous caller.
Oh, you whiner.
Yeah, just turn it down a bit, Kent. Real low. Thanks, Kent.
You're such a whiner.
Well, the guy's going to praise me. I want everybody to be able to hear it. Okay? So,
yeah.
Okay, what?
You got to praise you, Bob, because you got a mission. You got a mission here in Toronto.
Yeah.
Undoubtedly, it's part of the mission, but he'll spend his time every couple of weeks freeing your flocks. You come down, you're the shepherd, but you free the flock.
Oh, I see what you mean. I free the flocks.
I wanted to know if you could indulge me in order to put the fear of Bob in people.
Okay, go ahead.
Indulge me in quoting a little bit of Robert O'Driscoll.
Oh, yeah, the beast, the smiling beast, the beast with a smile.
The NATO and the Warsaw Pact, they're one.
Oh,
the
you...
Armageddon series, part two.
You got the book there.
Yeah.
Yeah, this he was interviewed in April issue of the Innes Herald, a very important interview.
Yeah, he made a little with it a while ago.
Okay, quote.
Okay. In the text of the poem, it says, "See Etienne Gilson's Terrors of the Year 2000, privately printed in 1948 and privately republished in 1984 by St. Michael's College, University of Toronto, near which Orwell has written so profoundly." Gilson writes, "With growing impatience, they await the arrival of the master who will impose on them all forms of slavery, starting with the worst and most degrading of all, that of the mind. Blessed be he who will deliver us from ourselves. Alone under a heaven henceforth empty, man offers to whoever is willing to take it this futile liberty which he does not know how to use. He is ready for all the dictators, leaders of the human herds who follow them as guides and who are finally conducted by them to the same..."
Helps to get an angle on why I claim to be a Catholic. It was it's this Neo-Thomas level that Etienne Gilson began to explain that is very important to understand the interval as tactility. Tactility being the sensus communis. It's Latin probably. I mean the common sense or the shared consensus of sensory life. That's tactility. And many people, subgeniuses, felt we lost that sensibility with the printing press and the Industrial Revolution. So Marshall thought that the 20th century electric environment brought back the sensus communis and tactility in the Neo-Thomas way that Joyce tried to explain it. So your quote is, I'd say, an incomplete understanding of the free levels of bottom-up expression that's available to us today by someone who is implying a conspiracy that our first caller negated, right?
Yeah, our first caller did negate it and wanted me to bring back Tim Leary. Like, I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing how you've penetrated me in a degree, penetrated my thinking, because, you know, it was resonating in my brain for days and days and days before tonight, this whole play on words between intelligence agents and secret agents.
Where was that resonating with you? You say for days it was resonating.
Yeah, just the play on words intelligence agents, you know, checking out my covert action information bulletin. I'm all prepared to hate everything that I don't completely understand and, you know,
pissed off at the Freemasons. You tell me not to worry about the Freemasons, and then the P2 comes up again. And it's the whole play on words between secret agents and intelligence agents.
I see what you mean, is that the very thing that you were playing with, you were engaging in seeing the top-down conspiracy, that it becomes a counter-theme tonight. Started off with the caller, but that was the whole theme of the Tim Leary Walter Boert discussion, right? What did Tim Leary mean by working for an intelligence agency? He was punning. Were you punning over the last couple of weeks on
kind
that?
Kind of, yeah. Or the pun was coming to me, but Confessions of a Hope Fiend.
Yeah.
I read Confessions of a Hope Fiend, and not much to credit in it, eh?
Not much what?
To credit in it.
No.
I mean, it's all theory, like the caller said. The conspiracy is all a theory. Well, George Bush being president of the United States is a theory to me. I mean, in terms of what you can prove to me, demonstrate to me.
Yeah, I think once you understand that every word in any language, but to make it simple, any word in the English language evokes all other words. You take any word, it will evoke and is connected to every other word in the language. So look at the connections there, and yet language plays a minor part in our world now. I mean, the verbal language or the national languages. Don't they play a tiny part today?
Yeah.
Is this what Dan is trying to get on with his show, The Problem with Language? Is that what he's trying to tell us about? Is that Dan Lander, I think his name is? Problem.
Yeah, Dan.
I think that this show goes beyond the problem of language if you think of language as just a verbal situation, right? I don't know if Dan could defend his definition of language, what it means. But if we understand that man in all his variety, you know, humankind, is language itself, then that gets beyond the verbal matrix that a left hemisphere society gets stuck in.
Language is a virus from outer space.
That's William Burroughs, right?
That's right.
And that's silly because I could say, you could say that if you understand. See, language isn't. He means verbal language.
Yeah.
What about man as language and all his inventions are linguistic?
All these attempts at communion.
Yeah, and the William Burroughs is so fetishistic and focused on verbal language.
And sure, if you're all that fetishistic about it, you're going to get disgusted with it every once in a while.
Yeah, especially when it has no vitality in the 20th century.
Yeah.
That's the problem, is that people have no community anymore because community is usually connected around the word. That may be why the Bible founded itself on the word, the spoken word. You know, in the beginning was the word. That's the basis of community. So if you don't have verbal relationships with people in some kind of continuity, then you have no community.
Yeah, and here we are in this dilemma. So many people seem to just be waiting for the word.
Yeah, and they're waiting for community. Waiting for Godot, that's waiting for community. They can have community, but only for a short while. You know, you can call it cults, or you can call it a job. You can call it any kind of social interaction is today a community, including just staying home and watching TV. That would be your community, a software discarnate state. But it's very unsatisfying to people because they can't engage all their faculties. So that's why we'd have to turn off the electric environment, because it hoiks up tactility to extreme. Right?
Yeah, turn off, and then we get enough rope.
And then we can turn it back on whenever we want to. We can have plebiscites when to have it on again. And that would be really dealing with our problems. Yeah, you're finding that once you connect with Bob and his work on the air here, that your life, your thought patterns, your percept patterns build up and have a kind of synchronicity with what Bob's going to do on the next show, right?
Well, like you pointed out a couple of shows earlier, synchronicity isn't all that important anymore.
No, that's a matching level.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, Ken.
I have to speak to you through the telephone.
Oh, great. So you're part of the show now.
Well, I'm basically part of the show because I had to talk through the telephone. We're getting a rather horrible-sounding whine coming over the air.
That's my voice.
No, that's not you.
No, we're not hearing it, Kent. It's not on my headphones. Do you hear it, caller? You're a whine on the air.
Kind of, but again, I'm listening to your voice through the radio. I can kind of hear it on my radio, not through the phone. Anyway, but I've had my pleasure.
All right, so maybe if we disconnect with Scott, something will happen. Well, Scott, call back if we run out of. I mean, basically, Kent can't operate with me. And I like the dialogue aspect of dealing with a face like Mike provides. Mike can't make it tonight. And
I can do it, but I didn't bring a microphone here, so it's very, very difficult to do anything. So I'm just running through a telephone.
And I didn't bring much data down tonight. I just got back, and you know, much alternative information. So I'm hoping to talk as much as possible to the church members.
Okay. Let's see if the horrible wine stops with my hanging up.
Okay, we'll call back if we're slack.
Chowder.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. Hello, CKLN. Dave hung up as well.
So we had several callers there.
Yeah, we had a few.
I hear someone calling.
Yeah, this is Tony. Tony!
Can't hear Tony. Tony, is Tony on?
Tony, are you there?
No, this ain't Tony's.
Hello?
He doesn't use that name.
What, Dublin?
He's only known as Dublin. That's probably why he hung up. Okay, Dublin, call in. Call him, Dublin.
Hello, CKLN.
Is that it?
That's it.
Oh, that's good. No, the wine's gone. The wine wasn't too bad. It was, like, very background. You had the voices good there about 3 or 4 minutes ago.
So it's not that irritating. Great.
Well, I don't hear it now, but it was very marginal.
Did you hear the letter at the beginning? This caller, person listening to our show up in Guelph, recognized your voice from other talk shows.
You know what I like about that, Bob? I like he read Werner Vinge, the Marooned in Real Time. It's an excellent book. Just beautiful, man. Tell him if he's listening, The Peace War is a previous book to that. It's not quite in the same class, but it's very nice.
Is that hyphenated?
No, just one word. I mean, two words.
Peace War.
The Peace War. It's about I told you about this before. It's about they discover a method of creating a perfect silver mirror.
And you're still conscious. So you're saying
you're living in the interval, Bob. You're living in an interval that's so small that it's a billionth of 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 a second.
But you're not dead.
But you certainly haven't got time to think.
but are you caught? It's like, are you asleep?
No, time on the outside passes in its normal way.
Yeah, but you don't see that.
You are living inside the tiniest fraction of time imaginable.
But are you aware of it?
You don't have time to think in a bubble, Bob.
So
however much time you need to think, it's more time than you've got in that interval. Okay?
So you're not dead.
So you could wait, and suppose the steady state, not steady state, you know the alternating Big Bang theory of the universe?
Yeah.
A Big Bang, an expansion, then a contraction to a Big Wimp.
Yeah.
Then out of the Big Wimp, another Big Bang. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. You could, no matter how many billions of years it was, you could cruise down time inside a bubble right to the penultimate moment, to the moment before the Big Wimp, before the next Big Bang. And if you unbobbled at that moment, assuming you had air to breathe and you weren't being fried, it'd be just like it was a split second ago when they bobbled you.
But are you aware of being bobbled? I don't get this.
You haven't got time to think in there, Bob.
You
wouldn't be aware of it.
You're dead.
No, you're alive, because if they unbobble you, bang, you're there again.
So you experience it. I see. You do experience it.
You experience the whole transition.
Yeah.
If you're bobbled and then unbobbled, then that fact is a fact in your history, your personal history. You know what happened.
That's like sleep, Dublin. You know, when you go to sleep, you don't know when you fall asleep, but you're aware of it when you wake up.
Bob, put it this way. If you bobbled the sun, right, the process of fusion, thermonuclear fusion that's going on in the sun would stop. It would simply stop until you unbobbled the sun. And when you unbobbled it, it would continue as though there had been no interval.
So this guy makes, that's what he means by marooned in real time.
No, it's more complicated. The United Nations bobbled every military base and every intercontinental ballistic missile and every atomic power plant on the planet Earth, including the Pentagon, Washington, D.C., Moscow. They quite simply bobbled all these places.
Were they conspiring?
They were conspiring for peace. That's why they call it the Peace War.
The title Marooned in Time is the same Marooned in Real Time is a similar concept. That's the other book.
Well, no, that's a different concept. in the first book, they bottled everything that was a military base or an atomic weapon or anything like that, right?
Did it work?
Well, the United Nations took over with their own private police. They captured all the remaining military technology, kept military technology at a level around 1960 with improvements, and ran the world, and they wouldn't tolerate progress.
So it was like using time as a military weapon. They were able to control time.
Well, no, they just used the bobbling device as a method of putting an instant freeze on all these military bases and missiles. So if you went up to a missile silo, you'd see a perfect sphere, as big as it had to be to hold everything that was inside there. A little missile base. Suppose you had one missile in the back of a tractor trailer, and you bobbled it. You'd have a bobble that might be a couple hundred meters across, diameter, right? But if you bobbled New York City, obviously you'd have something on the scale of a mountain.
Would it look like Bucky Fuller's geodesic dome?
It would look like a perfect reflective sphere. It would be a perfect mirror.
Yeah.
So if you get down into intensive areas like California, where there's all kind of missile bases and high-tech stuff every five blocks, then you got bobbles every five blocks, and the amount of sunlight that was captured and reflected down there changed the actual climate in the story.
So what's the drama? Yeah, what's the drama in the novel? They do this quite early in the novel, take over, or is that the climax?
Well, Marooned in Real Time deals with a fellow who was a private detective.
But you're switching to that. What about in Peace War? What happens there? What's the drama in that novel?
Well, a couple of bobbles accidentally open up, like the machine switches off, the effect cancels.
Yeah.
And a few people stumble back into reality. Like there was, they had the bobble, for example, fixed on all the airplanes. I think this is how it started. And there was one military aircraft that had a prefigured bobble on it. And it started to crash. And just as the instant it hit the ground, kabam, in that instant of time, all the bobbles all over the world came on. Pure coincidence.
Mm.
The plane crashed at the instant that the peacenecks bobbled the planet, right?
Yeah.
The story starts when this bobble goes, blink, out of existence. And here you've got somebody 30 years later wandering around in a brave new world, saying, what is this? What happened? How did I get here? And the story goes on from there, and you discover all about bobbles.
All right, now Marooned in Real Time, what does that tell us?
Well, that's a little bit different. Because, for one thing, you could make a spaceship with bobbles, right? You get inside a spaceship, you bobble it, right? Nothing can touch you. If you dump a bobble onto the surface of the sun, it just floats there. The energy of the sun cannot get through the outside of that force field, you see?
Yeah.
And so what you do is you drop an atom bomb overboard and you bobble up, right? And your force field comes into existence, kaboom, the atom bomb goes off like a firecracker.
Yeah.
And it blows you that away at a certain speed, right? You want to speed up, you just unbobble, drop another atom bomb overboard and bobble up again. You got to bobble up before she blows, right? Or you'll blow yourself to smithereens. But lots of neat ideas like that.
So what do you think of this guy recognizing your voice from other talk shows?
Oh, I think he's talking about Pat Burns because I told the truth once or twice in Pat Burns.
Right, and you weren't on too many other talk shows.
Oh, I do occasionally, but not really. Not with energy.
So, Dublin, I imagine you were ahead of all the events that have gone down since we talked to you, 6 weeks ago? It's been a long time since we last talked to you. What do you have to say?
It's more Meech Lake. That's the only reason I got on Pat Burns anyway, to talk about Meech Lake.
Right, but what do you say now?
I say that what Kent said last week about 5 in the morning, today, he said, we will all stand witness now to the political extermination of David Peterson.
He did. That guy sitting across from me made that prediction.
Yes, he did. It's right there. You don't have a tape, but I heard it between 4 and 5 o'clock.
And, Kent, that would have been September, going into September 6th,
yeah.
Right, the day of the election. Did you envision who the winner would be?
Well, no.
No, I mean Kent. I'm just asking
Kent.
Did
I give you I thought it was going to be a minority NDP.
Yeah, a lot of people. Did you say minority NDP? Did he say that?
No, we were guessing. I was speaking for myself. I was hoping for Peterson's extermination. I like that. That I think was the main point. And the idea of would it be a majority, would it be a minority, how would it go? I remember saying to Kent that I thought the people in Northern Ontario would revamp and go back to conservative, right? And
yes,
I thought that the NDP would get the city. But that's not the way it happened. The way it happened, I think all those people up north, they got TVs now, you know, and subgeneratively, I guess they're all down here in the big city with us, aren't they?
you
know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're in the interval now. They're in the television flicker with the rest of us. And so I think they went NDP. Now, I don't know that trying to analyze why that happened is necessarily the point. But I think Peterson promoted himself to a certain role. He said that he could define a constitutional reality for the country. And these are the underlying principles, the premises on which politics moves. Clyde Wells said that it was an invented process, invented by Mulroney in 1987, that the premiers had no role and no real right to make such binding commitments for the people. And that's what he said exactly. And I can recall it because I wrote it down. And I looked at it and I thought, that's the truth. The premiers have no role and no right to make such binding commitments for the people. It's not their role.
So Peterson
not Canada.
Yeah, so Peterson looks such a fake involving himself
he was grotesque.
With Mulroney.
He was grotesque, man. He promoted himself all in his own mind the way General Franco promoted himself after he won the Spanish Civil War. Hereforth you will listen to me. You know?
Yeah.
He went around when Meech Lake failed. Instead of getting the message that everybody in the country was mentally like a dog slavering at his throat, which is what was actually going on, this guy, he says, oh, in this brave new world, he was going to drop all the interprovincial trade barriers. Now, if he'd have been doing his job, he would have been dropping those barriers 10 years ago when he first got elected, right? We're supposed to have free trade. We want to have a strong dollar, not a Canadian peso. Anybody with a brain understands that that something has to be done about this. But this klutz, he left the interprovincial trade barriers alone with the regional disparities in this country and everything else that goes with it. But then on the Meech Lake hiatus, all of a sudden he became the man from GLAAD, the self-anointed white knight, right? And he started running back and forth and saying, oh, we've got to get along with Quebec. Like, him alone in a province full of bigots. So he figured, okay, I better go out and ask these bigots for a mandate so I can revise their future.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, you know, it's a real tribute to the stupidity of these people. I heard young liberals on the radio after he was defeated, and you should have heard their maundering chit-chat, you know, going on and on about this and that. What really stands out is that these people are living in a pulverized, splintered reality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like they're all ice and kaka-boom, you know, like some kind of little explosion went on there. And it's like every molecule in their body froze and became an ice crystal and moved out just a twiddle so that they're all taking up just a smidgen more space than they took up before, but now they're perfectly reflective klutzes, you know, walking around in a kind of a sub-universe of television snow interference on your TV. And they're talking all this bright stuff. You know, you talk about ecofascism and media ecology.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, the thing is, these people are the new barbarians. They have to fight their way back into the media ecology, which, you know, a few brave souls, Bob, like yourself and Kent and the sub-geniuses that attend to this proceeding, you know?
Yes.
Are trying to conduct a media ecology and create a possible media arcology. You know what an arcology is? An architectural concept,
yeah.
for anyone who hasn't heard the word before. And it's really, it's something like a great pyramid or, you know, a mighty Sumerian ziggurat or, you know, New York City made over, but made whole.
Yes.
Like Buckminster Fuller would do it. A decent big city with an internal ecology in tune with an external ecology where human beings could each have their own individual human ecology within themselves and between themselves, inside and outside the city. That would be an arcology.
Yeah.
That's what a true ecologist would be concerned with. But what we're doing here is, in a sense, I suppose, maybe an achievement would be the creation of a media arcology in which these barbarians who seem to have co-opted the political process in this country, but they would have to fight their way in here. They'd have to find out where it was at, you know, because in here we can see them.
Well, that reminds me. I invited Christine Hart once. She, the Minister of Communications for a few months, and then she had a little scandal this spring and had to resign. I invited her to join us, and we didn't hear from her. And she lost. So she's going to have to work her way back in.
Well, Remember the Great Swamp revamp last week?
Yeah.
Where they were...
you mean our show 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, tapping into the United States down there.
Yeah.
They had people composing music.
Yeah.
And then quickly burning it before it could be played.
Yeah.
You know? And I think, in a sense, that's what our politicians are doing right now, you know? They're composing probably brilliant ideas, and they're quickly destroying them before they could be utilized, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So all we really see is the pitiful kind of stuff that they're doing out there. You know, this is getting kind of sad because I don't want to... Next thing you know, it'll be OCA, and it just makes me... It upsets me, to be honest with you, because I don't see... The place of parliamentarians, right, would be in the parliament speaking for the people. Parliament's a place that's created for politicians to interpose, not their bodies, God bless me, no, but their voices and their minds. They should be on the line, you know, putting their brains and their hearts and their minds and their voices, you know, between the people and the guns, wouldn't you think? Or between the people and the love canal,
yeah.
Or between the people and the starvation, or between the people and bigotry, or whatever their job is to do. If they had a media ecology of Parliament Hill, that's what they'd be doing, right?
Yeah.
But what they're actually doing is continuing with their futile efforts to divide the people of this country who I hope have got enough brains to, you know, to do what they did to Peterson a few more times. But they're really putting those people on the firing line down there. They don't, you know, they just dismiss outright the idea that they have to talk to them.
So
they just don't have to talk to them. But they're willing to let Canadians stand in front of guns held by Canadians to prop up their failure to do their own job, which would be to give a voice to people in Parliament, right?
So are we hijacked? Is this a conspiracy? Is it stupidity? Can one label the cause of this phenomenon that you're finding quite sickening?
Well, the reason I find it sickening, oh, Christ. What do you want, the cause of it?
No, can one label the cause? There are several causes, I guess, but is there any point in talking about it, or should we just go out and, I mean, ignore them or shoot them? What is a human, you know, some genius supposed to do in this situation when you see this ugliness?
Well, we don't use guns, I guess. I just think, you know, if, as long as you understand that, I would say, you know, talking about guns would be a different conversation, that's all. But we don't use them. So hoard your ammunition, right?
Yeah.
Remember the face of the enemy, you know, and get active. When they turn their back, stab them, you know?
But what
when you
get
find them in front of you, knock them down. You know, they've got to be told, the politicians. Like, you got to ask yourself, you'll get your chance to get them like you got Peterson. The reason I find it sickening is that they've set up, you know, they're just doing their best to screw it up. That's what I think. It's one thing to talk. You can talk and have a lot of fun about politics, and you can discuss future scenarios, and usually the worst price you're going to have to pay is maybe a brief recession like we had back in 1982, that kind of thing, you know? Or on a milder level, a little Black Monday in the stock market. But the price that they're putting up right now is people's dignity and possibly people's lives, you know? So I just say I find that sickening, and I think it's worth saying, but it depresses me because you don't want to add fuel to a fire that might hurt people, right?
Well, how do you act without adding fuel and to know you're doing the best thing possible? What actions? Any action applies?
The only thing you can do is, I just think, the only thing I can think of to do is to tell your member of parliament, take the trouble to tell him personally, that as far as you're concerned, he's, or she, you know, is just the lowest kind of a rat, you know? Just say that everybody knows the constitution of the country is unstable. In a sense, it's up for grabs. Nobody minds that as long as we have a referendum or a proper kind of a process to deal with it, you know? So that's not really the problem. And the end of the century is coming up in a few years. The future's going to grab us no matter what we think we're doing, and the future's going to drag us downstream to where it wants to take us, right?
Yeah.
And the only job they got to do right now is the job they're not doing, which is protecting the dignity and the privileges and the identity and the voices of Canadians. Because I don't, for one minute, buy this bullshit about the warriors at Mohawk being a bunch of criminals, you know? That's just completely beside the point, eh?
All right, so we got another call. So you recommend that we stop reading the newspapers, stop listening to the TV, and we call our members of parliament constantly and harass them, right? Can we do that?
I don't know if that would do any good. I just say wait for your chance and remember what you're supposed to be doing. You know, when you get your chance, go after them.
Okay.
When they come looking for your vote or, I don't know, I just don't have a...
Okay, let's leave it at that.
I wish I had a better idea.
Maybe you'll have something to say in 15 or 20 minutes. I got to take another call. Call back if you can refine it better. Okay, take a break, Dublin. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Talk to you a little later, Tony. Hello, you're on.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah, it sounds familiar, your voice.
No, I haven't called before.
Does it sound familiar to you, Kent?
Yeah, I've called Kent before.
I've
called Kent before complaining about the signal.
Okay.
Because sometimes your voice is a little crackly, but I can understand it when it comes to music.
Right.
I like a good signal. What else should government do? I wasn't planning on following Dublin. And that's
a tough act, you mean?
I felt like I was put in a bottle. But he started talking at the end about what governments really should do.
Yeah.
And I figure they should be protecting the people from those people who own, to put it in an old-fashioned sense, those who own the means of production. Never mind about human dignity. They should give us freedom by giving us protection compared to, say, the communist system where the government owns the means of production. Communists who go for all the media scams, and I think a lot of people not only protest voted, but I think a lot of people believe in, like, the landfill scam, the homeless scam, and all these other anti-women and anti-men groups. And I think there are a lot of believers today. They believe in the media, and they voted for the pinkest as protest. But...
Yeah, they voted for the pinkest as protest. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, but on the other hand, I thought during the long conservative reign, they got so pink towards the end that they seemed like a bunch of goofs and got kicked out. And then the liberals got in, and they were too pink. I think they got kicked out because they were too pink.
Well, I think the way, like if I was given an opportunity to take on the reins of power, I'd be honest about the environment we live in constantly. I think that's the problem with Bob Rae, that he doesn't talk about the form of the environment. He just lives in the content. And that's what you're picking up. He's going to be another dupe of the content of the media. The media calls you, wants us to get into the form of what's happening, not the content. The content will always create a problem for us.
Right, I was hoping you would connect these two tonight.
Oh, yeah, the bottom, the conspiracy.
Bob Rae is... the most media. Media One.
Yeah, Media One, and it works for the what we call the non-media, the invisible environment, which is a medium, the visual space, the bankers, the corporate profit guppies, you know.
The ones who are behind the big media companies.
Behind the ones who own the media snow screen and would not advocate much publicity on explaining the media snow screen. Or snowstorm, right? They don't want that talked about too much. McLuhan tried it, and they nailed him. They don't. So that's their secret. Their conspiracy is to not allow this topic to be discussed as a serious problem, a serious situation we all have to live in. That's the conspiracy. That's the way the top-down guys, the invisible controllers of visual space, interact with the media conspiracy, is that they allow the media environment to carry on. They hide behind that.
Some, but who? I noticed that one big power today is the mafia.
Yeah.
And did they lose? Or are they also behind a lot of these
Well, they know
labor NDPers?
I think there
is a lot of ethnic labor indeed, peers, even though the liberals are out.
Well, I wonder if the NDP is controlled by what Dr. Beter called the Bolsheviks, the state socialists, and that as Canada falls apart, the true power on the industrial level surfaces, the state socialists. Maybe Bob Rae is not even aware of that, but it doesn't matter on a certain level who is controlling it. The point is that they can do all they want because the electric environment merges everybody and yet hides everybody from the string pullers. So as long as they keep the snow screen going, they can do whatever they want. They can move their money, their power, everywhere. So that's our dilemma, is that if we turn off the medium, the electric medium temporarily, maybe we can see what comes out of the woodwork, what's behind the scenes, even though it cannot be shown on the media because then it becomes another content. See, it's a real tricky catch-22 Zen problem to deal with this situation that Dublin's sick of. I mean, but you have to admit that nobody talks. That, I mean, what would Worthington, what would the Globe and Mail owners, what would these people do if people refused to have the Globe and Mail published, to read it, to buy it? Why don't we scream about that? Because that's the real pollution. We have to deal with the software pollution before we get to the nature pollution. You know, Earth's pollution. We won't be able to heal it until we deal with the software pollution, which is overlaying it, but at this point is beneath the natural pollution, because natural pollution is a concern, a figure they can hoik up as media content now. We call it ecofascism. And it's media content, and it causes all kind of reactions. People get bored with it. People get inspired because it's focused on. Others get cynical. The thing is that we're missing the point. The software pollution is the first pollution. This is what Pollution Probe never talks about. Any of those people, Greenpeace, they don't talk about this. They actually want to use the media. They love it when they get on the media and get coverage, right?
Yes, I found the coverage of the election particularly frustrating.
Well, everybody
there
does.
There were very few.
Everybody words. Does. No, people don't even watch it anymore. And that's another part of the conspiracy. You have a few pinks like Dublin's talking about. They come around and they hog the coverage, they hog the content, because the majority of the population is tired of the discarnate state and don't pay attention to it anymore. And if we can articulate the reason why they don't pay attention to it, we can accomplish something. This is the only real program. I don't want to make a fetish out of one aspect, but it is important to harp on this with everybody to get them to realize. That's why I don't see, when I walk around Toronto, and I'm pretty aware, you know, I'm Bob Dobbs, I can't get over the tragedy if people can't see what's right in front of their noses. And everybody sees this in different ways, what they think is everybody's hang-up. But I think I'm not projecting my personal point of view when I say what I see is what we're all seeing, and it's a shared environment, and that's a fact. We share this television environment, right?
Right.
It's
I couldn't tell exactly how many. Seemed like some of the NDPers were media images, and some of them were labor people from way back. I saw one steelworker on TV who was very ecstatic, but I wonder what kind of party he thought he was getting in. Or I wonder if Labour might take over the NDP.
Yeah, see, these are questions.
And I might go back to the old NDP pro-worker instead of pro-owner. TV show image.
Well, this is the problem. If you get ownership, you get labor-oriented ownership of the media, would they be aware of the fact that it's causing a lot of problems regardless of the ownership? This is the point. The electric media, doesn't matter who owns it, its effect.
What if the others are in charge?
Well,
various groups of selfish hate groups.
Well, they just make people more violent inside the media storm.
But they got people voting for them.
That's right, because
if they become the main drive behind the NDP as opposed to the Labour?
They could very well do that. We can't.
Then what happens? Yeah, I want you to tell me what's going to happen, Bob.
What's going to happen is we got more violence coming. See, that's the problem. As long as we're in this software.
Peterson was too violent.
The effect of his sleepiness created a violent reaction. See, this is the thing.
Sleepiness, but I don't know if there's any legislation that he brought in, perhaps not more than a few percent of the legislation that he brought in, that I wouldn't rather just get rid of, and I'll take it back.
Well, see, all this legislation... All this legislation is irrelevant to the media water we're drinking. And, you see, we don't...
I thought there was a lot of media-oriented legislation that while on the books, it doesn't affect people because people are still real.
Yeah.
People still have their own inner ecology, and a lot of people are ethnic or religious, or they believe in things that are totally different.
That's media content. See, the content is not the problem. You can have any content. That's why all the revolutions of the past 30 years came and went as content. The new left had their revolution, the new right had theirs, the sexual, the women's lib. Every revolution had its coverage.
A lot of laws are on the books.
Yeah, they're on the books, and they don't give any security or balance in people's lives because they're inside a media ecological situation that's run amok. And that's the secret story. That's the secret. So that merges top down and bottom up. If you know the conspiracy is hiding the fact that they don't control the media, but the media itself controls us as a form, and if it's not talked about, then we're victims of it.
I think the media created a lot of the images by which some of the NDP candidates went and got in it.
That's right. You know, like Toronto Life and... the local magazines, they think they have a right to put their magazines on the stands. We call it freedom of speech. Well, I don't think freedom of speech in any form is relevant to our problem. We've got to take on a collective yoga. And we're not going to do it. So let's play, right?
Yeah.
But if anybody asks you in a serious tone what the problem is, you tell them that. And say, I don't expect you to do this, but this is what it is if you want to know what has to be done. And maybe if we talk about it enough in our spare time, something will happen.
There's something else that, like, I think that should be brought up at election times. I think there are a lot of people, the word goes way back to the 60s. It was used a lot. People are alienated. A lot of people aren't voting. Millions of people smoke marijuana. And they don't like to vote.